Well, next up on the High Velocity Radio Show is the president and CEO of an organization called Point Clear. He's also an author and has a brand new book out called The Truth About Leads, revealing little-known secrets that focus your lead generation efforts, align your sales and marketing organizations, and drive revenue. Please join me in welcoming to the show Mr. Dan McDade. Welcome to the show, Dan.
Great to be here, Stone. Thank you.
Well, we are delighted to have you, man. President and CEO of a company, you've already got things going. You've got the keys to the executive washroom, and you just wake up one morning and say, I think I'll write a book. What in the heck were you thinking, man?
Well, you know, I had to write this book because I had to get the truth out about what's going on in sales and marketing right now. There's so much lack of alignment between marketing and sales. And there's an awful lot of money being wasted every day by marketing and salespeople. So I just had to get this book out of me, I guess, and get it out into the public. It's now available on Amazon.
Why? That's been a problem as long as I can remember, that there being a conflict between marketing and sales. Why does that happen in an organization?
You know, I read something over the weekend that said that it's a combination of an economic as well as a cultural problem. And, you know, the economic side of it is that for years and years, it's been very difficult to measure the ROI on marketing investments. You know, years ago, I think it was maybe the founder of Procter & Gamble who said, you know, I know 50% of my marketing is wasted. I'm just not sure which 50%.
There's a lot of wisdom in that.
So, you know, one of the things that's happened is that marketing has now defaulted to sort of a cost per lead mentality. And I'm talking really more about business to business marketing here as opposed to business to consumer marketing. But, you know, marketing basically has no measurement other than to say, I've got this much budget, I've got to drive so many leads. And to the extent they actually drive more leads, they get a bonus. Now, that doesn't necessarily really help sales, who is the recipient of the leads. And if they're getting basically garbage in, garbage out, which is mostly what happens, then, you know, the whole thing is really a waste of time. So, you know, what's happening right now is the microscope has been put on marketing from an ROI standpoint. Unfortunately, I think what's happened is that people have started to adopt what I call snake oil solutions, which is the, you know, the next shiny piece of metal that comes along that they latch onto and say, okay, this is going to be the holy grail for us. You know, let's go after that. And
it almost seems to me that leads are almost a four-letter word. Whenever I hear the word leads, I always think of Glenn Glory, Glenn Ross, and the battle for the magic leads. From a 30,000-foot view, why does an organization struggle with how to get good leads and how to qualify them, how to nurture? Which is why I suspect you wrote the book.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, leads are probably the most misunderstood things in the world. You know, and right now, one of the what I would call snake oil solutions out there is a kind of a dependency on a new acronym, which is BANT. And BANT stands for Budget, Authority, Need, and Timeframe. And on the surface, that actually sounds pretty good. You know, if you're a salesperson and you get a lead and the company has a budget, you know, you're talking to the person who has authority, there's a definite need, and there's a time frame for spending money, you know, that sounds like it would be ideal.
You're in sacred cow territory here. I mean, I was dipped in the school right here. We didn't call it that, but I was dipped in the school that you're talking about.
And many salespeople are. You know, the problem is that if you get a lead that has all four of those components, the chances are there's already a company that's won that business, and all you're going to do is be column fodder. You know, you're going to come in, you're going to prepare a presentation and a proposal, and you're probably going to be column fodder. If you look at it from a solution selling standpoint, you know, which is one of the sales methodologies out there that we actually really believe in, if you have the right authority, a person who can make a decision or at least a strong influencer, and you have a need, and that need is backed by some form of compelling event, what I call the tree is in the living room. You know, if the tree is in the living room, you're definitely going to call and do something about your roof. So if you have the authority and the need along with a compelling event, then typically the budget and the time frame are going to become apparent. And what you don't want to do is you don't want to wait until the last minute when somebody has already basically won the business, you know, because you were waiting for budget and time frame to be available.
Now, I know that you make the assertion at some point in your book, or you raise the idea that your sales force really needs fewer leads. That's a little bit counterintuitive, to say the least. Can you speak more to that?
Yeah, I have an expression that a lot of the solutions out there right now, they're capable of efficiently and less expensively getting you worse leads. You know, so So, you know, salespeople constantly complain about the volume of leads, and they constantly complain about the quality of the leads. And what we're saying is that, or what I'm saying, I guess, in this book, and what our company says to its clients is that you need to very carefully qualify leads and only have salespeople working on those leads that are really good. I mean, as basic as that sounds, there's so much garbage. I had a cup of coffee with a guy the other day, and he's the senior VP of sales for one of the local software companies. And he said, I got a stack of leads today, and there's not one of them in there that's worth my time to follow up. And as a matter of fact, even the rules that we've established for the leads, they happen to sell software solutions to banks. The rules we've established for following up or to generate leads have the bank has to have a certain size, you know, it has to have a certain number of assets or dollar assets and above. And all of these banks were disqualified simply based on size. So this is a little bit foreign thinking, I believe, but let's say, for example, that you have a sales rep and the sales rep has 40 prospects that they're working on. And I will tell you that at the end of a quarter, whatever they did on those 40 prospects is what they're going to do on the next 40 prospects. The problem from a sales management standpoint is that salespeople have way too many opportunities. And if they were actually forced to focus on fewer opportunities and they were held accountable for the results on those opportunities, then you would have a lot more clarity as far as the results and the actual productivity of the sales force. This year, for the probably the seventh year in a row, the number of salespeople actually making quota is going to go down again. It's actually less than 50% right now. It's going to go down again in 2011. It's down from a high of 65% just 5 or 6 years ago. And there's two reasons why it's going down. One is that quotas keep going up, despite the fact that the attainment of quotas going down. So at the beginning of the year, the slate's clean, and everybody says, well, let's go out and sell more than we sold last year. But the other thing is that, you know, the quality of opportunities that's being turned over to salespeople is just absolutely horrible. Most salespeople that you talk to will agree with that. And what needs to happen is we need to focus on quality, focus on and getting high-quality leads to sales, and then focus on holding them accountable for doing something with them. As simple as that sounds, that's why they need fewer leads.
But how do you begin to change that culture, too? Because you mentioned they're working 40 opportunities. Aren't they judged at an end of a month, end of a quarter report? Oh, you need to be increasing the amount of opportunities. Come on, feed that. And so it's just a mentality of feeding more into the trough. It's like website traffic. Okay, I got 10,000 visitors a month. Well, so what? If you only had five, but all five bought, that's a better – I mean, is that kind of the concept you're talking about?
Yeah, I think that ultimately what salespeople are held accountable for is revenue. And when a sales manager says, you know, I want you to make 10 cold calls every morning and 10 cold calls at the end of every day, and then I want to log on exactly what you did. You know, most of that is either not done or manufactured. And as a matter of fact, the better the sales rep, the less heat is on them because they actually are making their number. And nobody really cares about anything other than making their number. But you're absolutely right that if you could get in. Not to get too deep into this, but there are three different types of salespeople. There's hunters, beaters, and farmers. You know, hunters are they are in for the close. They're not relationship developers. They really just love the hunt. You know, they love the blood, if you will. You know, beaters are those that are beating the bushes looking for opportunities, and you know, those folks typically can't hunt. And then there's the farmers who are responsible for farming existing accounts and expanding those accounts. Well, if you take a cold lead, or if you take a lead, a good lead, and you give it to a farmer, you know, the chances are they're going to be too busy to do anything about it. A situation we had several years ago was with a company that sold computer equipment, and there was one individual who covered the Air Force Base, Warner Robins, down near Macon, Georgia. And he said, look, I spend every day at that Air Force Base. And, you know, you can call every other Air Force Base in the country, but you don't have to worry about that one. The woman who was running marketing looked at me and said, "Call, you know, we want you to call Warner Robins." The first week we were on the telephone making contact with the Warner Robins folks, we found a $1 million opportunity that they knew nothing about. Because this individual, as good as he was going around having coffee with the same people that he sold to, you know, year-round, and wasn't really going out and looking for new opportunities. So you want to make sure that in addition to having the right leads, good quality leads going into the funnel, You also want to make sure that you're giving them to the right person. You know, you want to make sure that if it's something that requires a hunter, you know, that you're giving it to a hunter. Unfortunately, only about 20% of the salespeople in the world are hunters, and they sell about 80% of what gets sold. So that's the other problem, is if you give a good lead to a farmer or to a beater, you know, the chances are it's not going to go anywhere.
80-20, there's not a situation in life that you can't apply it to.
That's right. Yeah.
Dan, you talked about revenue. That's what we all really, really care about. I mean, what are some tips that you can pass along to sales managers about generating more revenue for their companies?
Sales management is responsible ultimately for about six things, okay? They hire, they compensate, and they train, okay? Those are the first of them. And then the next one, and I call those actually kind of the science of selling. You know, there's all kinds of places you can go for hiring information, for, you know, how to train somebody, how to compensate them. I mean, there's just books written, there's consultants out, you know, there's just lots of resources there. But the next three are probably among the most difficult, because I call it the art of selling, and that's deployment, number one, managing, and then coaching and counseling. From a deployment standpoint, you know, deployment basically ideally is you have your best sales rep in front of the best prospect at the right time. I mean, ultimately that's what happens. But think about how companies deploy today. They deploy geographically. They do what I call the EM 3 method of distribution, which is eeny, meeny, miny, mo. you know, so there's not a lot of science that's actually applied to deployment. So the first thing I would look at is, how are you currently deploying your sales force? The second thing is managing them. And we talked about this just for a couple of minutes, just a moment ago. But make sure that the sales reps don't have too many leads. The problem as a sales manager is, if a sales rep has hundreds of leads, a boss of mine used to say there's food everywhere. You know, it's hard to control them because there's food everywhere. If they have too many leads, there's just too many things that can go wrong. What happens at the end of a quarter, because salespeople do their best job selling to sales managers, what happens at the end of the quarter is they say, look, I know I had an off quarter, but look at the pipeline for next quarter. And that's why I say, you know, evaluate a sales rep on the basis of, what did they have at the beginning of the quarter, and what did they do with what they had at the beginning of the quarter. I even tell people to say to a salesperson, you know, you can bring in all the leads you want. I mean, here's your 40, but if you want to go out and find another 60, that's fair enough. But what I'm going to be evaluating you on is the 40 that I'm giving you, or the 40 I'm holding you accountable for. And the last element is coaching and counseling. And a lot of people will even say, I'm going to coach and counsel that person. You know, they don't really understand what the difference between coaching and counseling is. Well, coaching assumes that the person wants to do the job. It just doesn't have the tools or the knowledge to do the job. So you're assuming the positive, you know, that person can do the job, wants to do the job. All they need is a tool to do it. Counseling, on the other hand, is somebody that won't do the job. You know, that has four things that you do. You basically say, here's the problem, here's what has to happen, here's by when it has to happen, and then here's what's going to happen if it doesn't happen. You know, those are the four things that are part of counseling. So I say, from a sales management standpoint, all of those are important, but the final three, what I call the art of selling, are where a lot of sales management issues happen.
You talk about multi-touch, multimedia, multi-cycle processes, and the capacity for those things to multiply results. Can you tell us more about that?
Sure. As a matter of fact, I'll tell you an example of how that works, and it actually ties into something that I guess you could call me a crusader about this, because there's an awful lot of focus on marketing automation in the world right now. And marketing automation, which is, you know, put a bunch of emails in one end and out the other end come leads, kind of oversimplifies the process. And I'm a huge fan of marketing automation. Don't get me wrong. But, you know, it's critically important that marketing automation is just one piece of a multi-touch program. So some years ago, it's been a couple years ago now, we had a large global consulting company as a client. And one of our target markets was the CFO at the top 50 utilities. And the CFO of the fourth largest utility at that time, which happened to be down in Texas, actually called us back on the 42nd touch. Now, some people will say 42 touches. You know, that's, you know, if you touched me 42 times, you know, I would never talk to you probably. But in this particular case, you know, at the last cycle, which is the third cycle of a multi-touch campaign using multiple media. In this case, it meant telephone, voicemail, email, as well as a Federal Express package with an industry publication. On the third touch cycle, the very last voicemail and the very last email we leave will say, you know, I'm not going to call you back because I don't want to pester you, but I would like to talk to you. If you would call me back, you know, that would be great. Or the email says, I don't want to fill your email box up with unwanted emails, but if you'll reply to this and let me know a good time to talk to you, you know, I will. So this guy calls us back and says, I've been extremely busy closing the books for the year, but if you'll call me back 2 weeks from Tuesday at 10 o'clock, I'll take that call because I've saved one of your voicemails and I've saved a couple of your emails and I saved that magazine that you sent me to remind me that I wanted to talk to you. So 2 weeks later, we called back. We turned that over as a lead. And 5 months later, that closed as a $1 billion deal for our client. I dare say that if somebody had not been using a multi-touch process, if they didn't use multiple media, and if they didn't invest in multiple cycles, they would have never gotten that business. You know, he would have solved his pain, he would have solved his need somehow, but it wouldn't have been with our client.
I read a book yesterday by a guy who said, "You insult me if you don't pester me, because presumably you want to do business with me because I'm busy and I'm successful and I'm achieving, and I got a lot going on. I'm traveling, I got meetings, I got this, I got that, and I'm distracted. And you may call me, you may email me, you may direct mail me, and I just, life's going on. I just, you know, so keep after me if it's important to you to do business with me. And ultimately, we're going to connect. And if you just do a half-assed attempt and give up after a couple of touches, then the heck with you."
Yeah, it's counterintuitive, but I spent about 10 years in the direct mail marketing business with large catalog companies. And, you know, if you receive catalogs, you know that you'll get a catalog today, and then 4 to 6 weeks later, you'll get almost the identical catalog, but maybe with a different cover or with a little different offer on it. And the reason for that is that, you know, if I got a catalog today and I happen to be in a bad mood, or, you know, I happen to be temporarily in the fetters of impecuniosity, you know, I didn't have any money, or, you know, some other problem.
Did we record that phrase? I got to go back and I'm going to use that.
But 6 weeks from now, you know, it's a sunny day and, you know, I feel better about life, and, or, you know, I have a need that's come up in the interim. So, and it's exactly the same thing, Todd, to your point, it's exactly the same thing when you're reaching out, contacting business people, and you want to stay with them long enough to get their attention. And I don't mean, you know, that it's a bunch of telemarketers reading scripts that go on endlessly and you hope that they don't hang up before you get to the punchline. That's not what I'm talking about at all. I'm talking about an educational series of touches that helps them and helps them understand that, you know, they're dealing with issues. They're not the only one dealing with issues. We happen to be expert at how to solve those issues. And it's at least worth a telephone conversation for us to determine whether or not there should be a next step.
Does the social web complicate your work, or does it facilitate your work?
It's a great question, and as a matter of fact, I'm doing a session for Microsoft at the end of this week on social media.
Wait. You are doing a session for Microsoft on social media. I'd be screaming from the rooftops telling people.
Well, it's actually for their partner network, and it's a program called Marketing Monarchs that Microsoft has put together, and it's actually a terrific program. They're very supportive of their partners. You know, what I'm saying in this particular case is that I'm calling it the elephant in the living room. You know, that everybody talks about social media. Everybody says you should do social media. You know, everybody says they're putting more money into social media. You know, the problem is that it's very time consuming and it's very expensive. So I think that what's happening with social media is that it's pulling a lot of dollars out of traditional media. And it's not necessarily appropriate for that to happen, particularly in a business-to-business environment. So, you know, one of the things that we talk to our, I'll be talking to the folks about at the end of this week is that, you know, number one, focus on the CRM, focus on your database, making sure that you have a clean database, that you're updating the database, you're adding new prospects by doing a gap analysis. You know, there's all sorts of things to do there. The second thing is, you know, according to Serious Decisions, within just a couple of years, 70% of all opportunities are going to come from your website. So that's going to put more and more importance on, you know, how valuable is your website? How does it facilitate what they refer to as the buyer's journey? The next most important thing, and this does get into social media, is your blog. And the blog is important for several reasons. Probably the number one reason is it helps you from a search engine optimization standpoint. In just about a year and a half, we went from being ranked 3 million in websites to being ranked 1.2 million. That doesn't seem like much of a move. Microsoft, as an example, was number 48. So we have a ways to go to catch up with them. But the move from 3 million to 1.2 million means that we're in the top 4% of all websites, and it's almost entirely due to our blogging. So the next thing down is the blogging. And then finally, from a B2B standpoint, I would heartily recommend LinkedIn. You know, a lot of folks know about LinkedIn. A lot of people, you know, have anywhere from, you know, 50 to 5,000 or 50,000, you know, LinkedIn friends. And Darcy, to your point, I don't believe in linking in solely to build my contact list. I believe in linking in so that I have contact with the right people and I have the right people in my network. And then after you've mastered all of these things, if you have a great database, a great website, a great blog, if you've used LinkedIn, you know, to its full capability, then you can begin to look at things like Twittering, for example. We do a lot of tweeting. I noticed you guys do too, you know, on behalf of the radio show. And then also Facebook. You know, Facebook, I think right now is, and I go out on a limb saying this, I think it's really more of a business-to-consumer type offering as opposed to a business-to-business offering. A lot of branding that goes on there. And then you can get into some of the other areas. Again, marketing automation is a great way of taking a large number of email addresses and keeping in touch with them and monitoring how they're doing. But marketing automation, I think, should come below all of the things that we just talked about.
Now, I understand that you are also the grand poobah of something called the Tag Education Collaborative. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, the Tag Education, I appreciate you asking about that. So the Tag Education Collaborative is all about STEM education in Georgia. STEM is science, technology, engineering, and math. And as many know, you know, Georgia doesn't exactly rank in the top states when it comes to education. However, I will say in the last year and a half that I've been involved with Tag Ed that there's a tremendous amount going on in education. I'll give you one simple example. Sometime this year, if it hasn't already happened, sometime this year, every student in every classroom and every teacher and every school district and every county is going to be rolled up into a database that's housed in Atlanta, and information is going to be tracked about how those students are doing so that you can reward the schools that are doing a good job and you can help the schools that aren't doing as good a job. You know, I happen to live in Gwinnett County. We have one of the greatest high schools in the country in Norcross High School, but there's a lot of schools in the state that don't even have basic science teachers. You know, there's some counties that have two or three science teachers in the whole county. So what we're focused on is we're focused on right now middle school and high school students and enhancing the STEM education for those students so that we can compete. And our ultimate goal for the around 12,000 TAG members in the state of Georgia is our ultimate goal is to basically build the new workforce for them. Because as you probably know, there just aren't enough science, technology, engineering, and math graduates coming out of our school system, and that includes college. So thanks for asking about that, Stone.
If you're just joining us, we've been visiting with President and CEO of Point Clear, Dan McDade. He's released a new book called The Truth About Leads. Dan, where can our listeners get in touch with you, learn more about your services at Point Clear, and where can they get their hands on this book, man?
Probably the best thing is just to visit pointclear.com. That's just like it sounds, Point Clear, which actually was named after Point Clear, Alabama, because I love that place so much.
Nice.
Down near Fairhope. But pointclear.com, my contact information is there. And you can also go to amazon.com and look up The Truth About Leads. There's actually a couple of videos out there right now that talk about why the book was written, and there's a testimonial that was given by video. And at Amazon.com, The Truth About Leads.
Well, it has been an absolute delight having you on the show, man. Thanks so much for joining us. Will you come back sometime? Maybe bring a client, we'll visit with them too, or maybe somebody from the Tag outfit.
That sounds great. I'd appreciate that opportunity. Thank you very much.